Welcome back to episode 37 of the Run It Three Ways podcast. We're finally back after what I'm going to call our summer break. We've been busy with holidays, work trips, filming various pieces of YouTube content. So the podcast has been on hold for a few weeks. Hopefully on today's episode, we can bring you all back up to speed. Boys, welcome back to the podcast. How have we been? It's been a while.
All right, boys. All right.
How's it going, fellas? It has been a long time, hasn't it? I was trying to figure out before we jumped on how long it had been.
Three weeks. Yeah, I think we missed three episodes, right?
Cool. That's pretty good going. Form.
I can't work out whether we get how many, like, if we're going to lose all of our listeners or if we're going to get a dramatic spike now we're back.
People are wanting I've had a little look at the stats, and on the last episode that we published has got over 5,000 listens, which is about 1,000 more than we usually get. So maybe, you know, distance makes the heart grow fonder and all that.
Yeah, let's hope maybe. So,
I feel like it's also quite good that we, like, not good, but the episodes that we've missed, so much has happened in the running world that I genuinely don't know how we would fit it all into the episode. So I like the fact we're just starting from afresh.
They could have been absolutely cracking episodes though, couldn't they?
Oh, they could have been unreal.
We wouldn't have struggled to find stuff to talk about, that's for sure.
I know, right?
How are we going to do this then? How are we going to do this? Because we obviously can't just rattle through our training weeks like nothing's happened. Because are we just going to have a chat? Basically,
yeah, I think so. Just do a little bit more of a general update, like, tell us about your training, what you've been up to.
Yeah.
Tom, you've been jetting around the world. Callum's done a decent 1 mile race.
End of season break.
Exactly. It could just be to have a catch up and try and summarize the last 3 weeks if we can.
What this episode will be like is, I don't know if you ever did this when you're at primary school, but you know, when you get back after the summer holidays or Easter holidays, whatever it is, and you had to like write in the book what you'd been up to. On my holidays, I did blah, blah, blah. So that's the kind of thing we're looking for with a bit more detail.
Yeah, like it.
That sounds good. All right.
Who's going to get started with their week recap then?
The caveat, I guess, is going to be, I can't even remember what I did 2 days ago, lads. So I feel like all we're going to do is talk about what we did in the last few days. So listeners, that's a good reason to follow us all on our respective social medias, LinkedIn, you know, places where we're doing stuff, so you can see what we're up to when we're not recording the podcast.
Well, yeah. I personally really want to hear about Callum's trip to, was it Greece that you went to with Alice?
Yeah, I went to Greece, yeah.
I need to know about the 1 mile race, the trip to Greece, and what you're doing ahead of your prep for Latvia this week, isn't it?
I'm just going through my training and seeing what shit I've been up to right now.
That's a good way to do it, I think. Let's prompt each other on this. So, Ben, that was nice. You raised a nice little trifecta of things that you're like, Callum.
That's what I've seen anyway.
So, here's a little summary for everyone. So, I'm pretty sure we recorded a podcast when I had a week off. We did, because that was the week where Tom ran more than me that week. I remember that one. Heartbreaking week.
Get in.
Then I had basically 3 weeks of training, an easy week, a couple of decent weeks just getting back into sessions. All I've been doing is just running up hills, basically, and doing tempo stuff, pretty much. That's all I've been doing. And then the first week of September, which is 2 weeks ago as of now, or three weeks ago as of now, sorry, I raced the UK Mile Championships.
That was 3 weeks ago.
It was the 7th of September, and it's the 26th today. So what's that? Like 19 days. It's my sister's birthday, by the way. Shout out.
Happy birthday.
She doesn't listen to this. But anyway.
Just send her a link as a birthday present.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, I'll get it recorded into a card. So when she opens the card, it'll just go, "Happy birthday from the Run It Three Ways boys."
We're all American, are we?
Yeah, I'm sure the only software that exists is probably American for that. Anyway, or Chinese, but I didn't want to do that accent. So...
if we're getting cancelled for some of the stuff, well, people are trying to cancel us for some of the stuff that we're saying already, then that would definitely tip it over the edge, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So, I think we avoid the Chinese accent on episode 37.
Yeah, unless it's a genuine impression of someone that you've met, but I, in these 3 weeks, didn't meet anybody or didn't speak to anyone that I recognised as a native Chinese person. So, race the UK Mile Championships Friday the 7th. In Newcastle. Some of you may have seen it. It was on BBC. It's still on BBC iPlayer if you want to go and look back, although the camera quality is absolutely terrible.
They literally miss all the key points of the race. But
and I got shafted, right? I got major shafted. So there's about eight of us in the race, nine of us in the race. And at the start, a guy comes up to me, about 10 minutes before, and he's like, Callum, and I'm like, yeah, yeah. He goes, right, at the start, three of you are getting called forward, so you just need to look at the woman behind the camera, and she's going to go like, well, obviously, audio, everyone's an audio listener, but I'm miming what they were doing, but essentially, I'm going to gesture with my hand from behind the camera, and when I point at you and gather you to step forward, you just step forward and look at the camera, and the announcer, he'll be in time with the camera, so when you hear your name, you can smile, do whatever. I'm thinking, all right, standard, yeah, not a problem, cool. So we all line up, and there's three of us that are all like, oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. We're the ones that are getting pointed out. The woman gestures for me to stand forward, and I'm like, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, this is none of my credentials that have been read out here. Like, I've done none of this stuff, right? So I've stepped forward, and then just as I'm stepping forward, they're like, Alex Malloy. And I'm like, for fuck's sake. So I look over, and luckily, like, it was such a good bunch of lads, like, we all know each other like reasonably well from racing at British Champs and just various different trips and stuff like that. So like we could all laugh about it and just have a joke and stuff. But I was like, my big moment, I've told everyone, oh yeah, tune into BBC or Red Button, you know, like the physio's watching, this person's watching, and I've stepped forward. It looks like I've done it at the wrong time. Like I'm some sort of idiot that doesn't know his own name.
First
anyway,
time on the big stage.
That was funny. Wrong. And then the second thing that was funny is when they did get me, when it was me and I stepped forward, which is last, which is kind of prestige, they obviously can read out any achievement. And, I, you know, without blowing my own trumpet, raced with GB a couple of times, won some NCAA titles, stuff like that. The achievement that I got up on the graphic on the TV and what the announcer said was that I came second in a Watford BMC 800 metres. Right? And this was... and. For listeners, you might be thinking, oh, I wish I could come second at a BMC. That's pretty good. It was the C race. It wasn't even the A race or the B race. It was the C race where I came second.
Second place, mate, though.
So that was what was on TV. So I don't know who compiles these things, but yeah, absolutely, absolutely bonkers. But anyway, yeah, the race was good. I won. It was just a square, pretty much. You just like turned left three times, went through some bollards where you either got through them safely or were going to pretty much... Yeah. Write yourself off from the waist down.
Let's talk about these bollards, because I messaged you afterwards and was like, running at sub 4 minute mile pace at those bollards coming off that bridge must have been fun. And you just sent me a video of you training running through bollards, which
mate,
I thought was pretty cool.
So I didn't even think about this until the week of the race. And where I do my strides, literally on my street, is like closed at one end to cars. So it's like pedestrianized at one side and open to cars at the other to stop it being like a rat run between two main roads. And a couple of days before the race, I thought about it earlier in the week, but I didn't actually run through them until my pre-meet the day before. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll do my strides round the corner. So I have to go through these bollards just to kind of see what they're like. And I thought, in case I win, I better film it. Or in case I crash into the bollard, I better film it, you know? So I'll film. So if I like it all comes falling down on race day, I can be like, well, at least I practiced. So yeah, whether that gave me the edge or not, I don't know. But my plan was basically just be in the lead when I go through the bollard so I can see what's going on and I'm not crashing into anything or whatever.
Yeah, I think it was a good tactic because the fella behind you literally nearly ran into the bike, didn't he?
Yeah. James nearly, like, the bike, like, was trying to brake and its wheels was stopped, but it was skidding down the hill, like what you do with ice. It was a really good event and the atmosphere was really good. But the organisation just sometimes fails me of, like, how that course is going to be allowed for a mass participation event, which it did an hour after my race or 2 hours after my race.
Really?
I have no idea how health and safety covers that. And I was like, oh, are you guys going to take the bollards out of the ground? Like, are they ones that you can move them down? She said, no, but we're going to put some mats on them. So if you crash into them, you should just bounce off. I'm like, right. Well, my concern is if I crash into the bollards, I'm not going to qualify for the world championship. So whether there's a mat on it or not is not really my issue here. I'm not Like, I'm not worried about banging my knee. It's more the fact that I could run into it in the first place. She was like, well, yeah, the ones that don't go up and down. Like, why did you pick this course? You literally had, how many years have you known that this was event was going to happen, you know?
Baffle me a little bit, but...
Yeah, and as well, like, again, oh, I could go down a rabbit hole. This is not just a podcast about this event. But, like, we started at 4:30 p.m. on a Friday, which for me, as someone who's got a reasonably flexible job and schedule and stuff, that's fine. I could make it work, go up the night before, not a problem. But like this was a UK champs. Yes, it was invite only, but the vast majority of people who were invited, so I think it's people that have run, say, under 3:42, are not professional runners. Everyone's got a job or university or whatever's going on. So I don't get how you can start a British championship at 4:30 on a Friday. That's during the working day. So for a lot of people, like my teammates that came up with me, two of them are teachers, they had to like apply to get the time off work to say, oh, sorry, I can't teach my class today, or I'm going to have to miss this, you know, commitment I've got to go, which again, I just think is completely wrong. Like, why did you need to do it on a Friday? Just choose a weekend where you can have it on a Saturday or Sunday so it's fair for all participants, because I think the turnout would have been a lot better, even though it was an elite event. I think it would have been a lot better if it had been on a more inclusive day. It very much seemed like it was just a case of, oh, if you're a professional or you've got a flexible job, then you can turn up. Is someone breathing really loudly? Sorry.
Yeah, that's definitely Tom, mate. I was about to...
Am I breathing loudly? What's going on?
I thought there was like some sort of dragon in the room.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I can hear it and it definitely isn't me, so...
Yeah, it's not me. I'm talking.
Is it a rumbling noise?
No, no, it's literally like...
Someone's got the microphone stuck up their left nostril. Yeah.
it sounded like you're at the seaside.
And as a result, mate, I haven't...
distance away.
I didn't listen to a word you said because I was just thinking, oh, fucking hell, Tom's breathing down the mic. I can't hear a thing.
Anyway,
why didn't you jump in earlier?
Long story short, I won the mile race, so I've qualified automatically for Worlds. This was on the 7th of September, on the Friday. On the Monday, I went on a holiday to Greece for a week. And as a result, when I booked this holiday, I was going to do track all summer. And then that was going to be my week off when I was away in Greece.
Yeah, I did think about that.
But because obviously you book things far in advance, don't you? But then I didn't
know. Ended up winning the UK 1 mile road championship. What a shame, eh?
I didn't know when I booked it that I was going to run the qualifying time, do this, do that. So when I went on holiday, I did have to train, which was still fine. But yeah, then I've just done 2 weeks of training, which brings us up to the point we're at now as a recording, which is a Tuesday, and I've got the race on Sunday. So yeah, that's kind of where I've been in a nutshell, which was basically a week off, 3 weeks of training, a really good race, a holiday for a week, another week of training, and then I'll do a race again. So yeah, that's me for the last sort of 6 weeks or so.
Nice.
This is a little summary.
Has anything changed since you run, like you've won yourself a UK title? Has anything changed in terms of like, have you had anyone contacting you from brands? Have you had like press wanting to speak with you? Have you seen an Instagram like influx of new followers, anything like that?
Not massively. Like brand stuff, yeah. Like I've having conversations with people about different stuff. Like whether I'm going to do something is I've got like a very unique situation, as I've mentioned here before, in terms of like, I don't really want a contract unless it's a really meaningful one. I don't want to just be like, oh, I'm a pro runner and someone gives me like a few pennies that's going to be able to cover me getting a train, but I get to wear a pro kit. Like I'm not really asked about that.
Yeah.
I'm having some...
I wanted to ask about that as well, because you recently extended your SOAR contract as well. So I've seen over the last few weeks as well. So,
yeah. Well, basically, I mean, I don't want to shoot myself in the foot because I'm still talking to various people about different ways that we can make things work.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the way that I see, as a general statement, the way I see the landscape right now is like, either you can sign a professional contract that is going to be a base salary that you're happy with, where you're like, right, I will commit to this brand to earn this amount of money for a year, and I'll be exclusively just wear their kit and make sure that I jump through their PR hoops, make sure I'm careful what I say online and like really respect the brand. That's like option A. And I would call that like the traditional professional route, which you see a lot of people signing. The reality of that situation is, unless you're really, really good, and I'm quite good at 1500 meters, but unfortunately there's 7 people in the UK that are amazing at 1500 meters. So the likelihood of me breaking through that event is, you know, seemingly smaller, or at least on paper. So a lot of people like me would be left with, oh, we want to sign you and want you to wear our professional kit. We can only offer you this amount. And it's like very small. And when I say small, it's like, you know, you wouldn't be able to live off it. You're going to have to have a job base amount, but we'll give you this bonus structure where if you chase this time or compete on these events, whatever, whatever, then you'll be able to earn enough that it will be quite lucrative. The problem with that is 2 things. Is one, you have to set up your whole season to make sure that you're chasing your bonuses in order to get the money you need. And secondly, a lot of brands now, as you guys know, working in the industry, are more concerned with the roads than they are things like the track. It's very rare you're going to get a really lucrative bonus for a 1500 or something like that at my level. It's more, hey, go and get a half marathon or get this 10K road time or compete at these events type thing. So that's option B, where right now I could sign with the brand 100%, but it would come with a lot of downsides of hoops I have to jump through and things I have to do, compared to continuing to work with SOAR, who are basically like my mates at this point in terms of we understand each other, what I can say, what I can't say. They, you know, pick up things where they're like, oh, we think this would be a great opportunity for you, like different bits and bobs. Allows me to make my own content. I get to wear kit where no brand is going to have better kit in terms of apparel than SOAR, as you guys know.
Yeah.
And it gives me the leeway. The conversations I've had with them for the contract extension is basically, look, guys, if something comes up where it's really good money or really good exposure, but I have to wear something from Hoka, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, whatever, can we have some flexibility to make that happen as long as I'm not, you know, like ridiculously promoting it and saying, hey, buy this t-shirt, blah, blah, blah. If it's like, oh, wear these shoes or do this sort of opportunity. And, you know, they're super flexible with that sort of thing. Because ultimately, like I've said before, Saw, really, their job is to try and, like, they don't want to have you forever, if you get what I mean. Like,
they're almost facilitating your pathway into the elite level.
And they would love to. If they had the money, they'd love to be able to sign people and go, hey, we'd love to be able to pay you the salary. But for them, nothing makes them more proud than having Zach Mohammed for 6 months and then he gets a Nike contract. Working with Rory Leonard, then he gets a Hoka contract.
Exactly.
Working with, you know, different people. But yeah, I'm just enjoying it and just doing different things. There's no need for me right now to be like, how would being pro change my life? Not really. All I really need is someone to give me some bloody shoes. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
give me some shoes and then I'll happily, like, I'm passionate about making content and my journey and stuff like that. So I don't need something for nothing. I don't need someone just to pay me because I'm Callum Elson. Like, I would rather say to you, hey, can you give me some money? I want to create this really valuable bit of content or entertaining bit of content for you or whatever it is. So, but yeah, in answer to your question, I have had more, I think people take you a bit more seriously when you're kind of like, all right, this guy's not just made a couple of relay teams for cross country. He's like consistently, so you've been a year now since I got back from America that I've consistently turned up. I don't think anyone will be able to recall a race that I've done particularly shit in. I pretty much am a consistent performer. And I've made 3 GB teams in a year. Most people don't make 3 in their life. Do you get what I mean? So, like, I think people are like, oh, shit, maybe this guy, maybe we should get in now. Because some people are starting to think, will we be an idiot if we could get him quite cheap now? And he does end up running 3:32 in June. And then suddenly he's worth triple the price.
Yeah.
But in my head, I'm going, well, actually, I don't need you right now. I'm going to wait till I run 3:32. And then you can pay me triple the price. Do you get what I mean? It's kind of like, I'd rather just risk it.
I think it's very smart. I think when I saw you post about it on Instagram, like, you've extended your contract with Saw and, like, the flexibility you've now got with your contract, like, being able to do these sort of experiences, like you're saying, whereas you might be asked to go to the other side of the world and wear some kit from another brand and you get that opportunity. You can earn some money through that. I think it's just a very sensible way of doing it. And like you said, it's a little bit more untraditional, but a lot of the stuff that you do across your platform and you have done so far to this point has been, like, untraditional, if you like. So I think it's a pretty smart move, and I think you're going to see, I hope it is successful for you.
Thanks a lot, mate.
I think it's going
to
be good.
The one thing I will say to caveat it, and something that people listening who are, like, in that industry will know, is, like, where I have to be careful is I can say I want to do things my own way, blah, 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 but the running world and getting into races does work in a very traditional way.
Yeah,
where
true.
If you have an agent and you're with a brand, it's infinitely easier to get into the high level meets that you need to get into. So I'm not being naive in the sense that I know when June rolls around next year and everyone is trying to get into a race that's going to run 3:33 to get the Olympic time. If I had an agent and a Hoka professional kit, it would probably be easier to get into the races.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my job. I don't need to worry about it for 6 months, but in 6 months' time, that's where I need to kind of get my ducks in order and go, okay, right, you've done things your own way now, but now you kind of need to play their game a little bit. Because
it's almost like there'll become a point where it becomes more of a necessity to have a pro contract so you can get into these big, like, I don't know, Diamond League races, you know?
Yeah, unless you can, Or I just need to go on Sunday and just spank it and win World Road Mile and then I'll be fine. So
You'll have 100 contracts on the table in the morning.
That. Yeah. But anyway, that's where I've been, boys. Sorry for the, I felt like I just rambled there, but I'm excited to find out what you guys have been up to.
No, I think it's good, mate. This is what we're going to do in this episode of the pod. Just go through each other's, like, what we've been up to. So I think that was a pretty good summary.
Yeah, that wasn't rambly. I thought that was a pretty solid.
Listen to the Callum Elson show all day, to be fair.
Yeah, the Callum Elson show. Let's have a little spin-off.
You know, I used to be on the radio. I used to be on the radio when I was younger, you know, at school.
I'll pack it in. Like the school radio.
Round Day Radio. Right. Yeah, Round Day Radio.
Round Day Radio. I did a bit of radio when I was at uni, actually, as well.
We were born for it. We only did it for 1 week per year, though. Like, the school couldn't run it all year round, you know? I'll send you a link now, boys.
I have to try and find an old episode.
I'll send it into the chat now, Round Day Radio. I'll find some old footage and we can put it on the Instagram. I'll sort that out, don't worry.
Nice. And before we move on to either me or Tom, what's the plan for for Latvia. Is it this weekend or?
Yeah, so it's Tuesday. It's Tuesday right now. I fly on Thursday and then I race on Sunday. And
so on the 1st of October.
Yeah, 1st of October, and I race at like 1:30 local time. I think it's 2 hours ahead of the UK. And
what do you know about the race itself? Like the course, the people that are going to be there.
I've seen the provisional start list, and it says there's 37 people, and like it is stacked, but it's not. You know, like I'm going in with a really positive attitude. Basically, I just want to fully send it, like, and just try and finish up as high as I can. There is some mint people there. There's like Reynold Cheruiyot, who just came like sixth in the world or something ridiculous, and has run like 3:32. There's like Hobbs Kessler, 3:32. There's some really, really good guys. But it's a road mile, so you never really know how exactly it's going to play out. And the course is super interesting because it's like, it's basically two 90 degree turns and then just like 800 meters straight line to the finish, which is, and it's like pancake flat as well. So I think it's going to be fast. The winner's going to get the world record because they just started doing world records for the mile. I don't know if you saw that. They just started ratifying road. The road mile has never been like an official world record, but they've just started ratifying them. So Sam Prekel, his 4:01 mile is like the world record now. So technically I could have got it if I'd run. Obviously I didn't, I ran 4:08, but like that race would have counted because there's certain stipulations about like the elevation. It can't be, it has to start and finish have to be within a certain distance of each other, all this sort of thing. So like Fifth Avenue where they run 3:47, that doesn't count. Because it's downhill. It's still got like too many net elevation. So you'd think whoever wins this mile is probably going to run under 4 minutes. So that'd be pretty cool to say, I've been in the world record race if they break it. So yeah, it could be cool.
What shoes are you going to wear as well? Final question.
That's a great question.
At the moment, the front runner is the On shoe, the Cloudboom Echo.
That's what you wore for the UK mile, right?
Yeah, and that's primarily why, because I'm like, oh, I've raced in them. I know what they are. But I might wear the Rocket X2, the Hoka Rocket X2. I think they're quite good.
Yeah.
I just
pretty lightweight and direct. I think they'd be a good choice.
Yeah. They're good. I'm definitely, it's definitely one of those. I'm not wearing the Vaporfly. I just prefer the On. They're just quite narrow, quite close to the ground. I quite like them.
A little bit firmer than a Vaporfly as well. Probably a bit better for all out efforts, I'd say.
Yeah. Probably one of those two shoes, but we'll see. If you see me rocking something else. I actually just got this carbon shoe this morning, right? From this company in Indonesia.
I didn't see that.
Called Autos Elite. I didn't even put a photo of them on the Instagram, the carbon one, because it looks absolutely terrible. Like, bloody, if Rad saw this, they'd have a field
day. Yeah, I was just about to say that.
It looks terrible, but I'm keen to give it a go because I've never tried because I don't get sent all the shoes. If I ever buy a shoe, it's like the top of the range market one. You know, it's like the best shoe, like the Vaporfly. So I've not tried any sort of the like.
You've not tried an X-Step or something like that.
Yeah, I've not tried any of the shit ones, so I can't wait to try it. So I can be like, and they're only like early in their development, but I think it'd be cool to notice the difference and why we kind of pay the top dollar for the good shoes. But yeah, that's me, boys.
Very good. Talking of Rad. You know the track nights thing that I messaged you guys about in the chat.
I know what you're gonna say. Go on.
Me, Tommy, and
Dan Barrett,
Dan Jarvis.
Oh, Dan Jarvis.
are in the team, so we're gonna try and go down to the lovely track nights and see if we can earn a little bit of cash.
I heard it's a mad format, isn't it? Like a 800 mile, 3 and then 2 mile, and then isn't the final like 3 times 400?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it.
That's mental.
I'm doing the 800 because I've got I'm racing a half marathon this weekend as well, so that'll be fun.
Oh, what? You're not doing the 2 mile?
No, Jarvis is doing it.
Oh, he's still good, I guess.
Yeah,
I
think there's not much between us.
I think you guys will smash it. And 3x400, you've all got pretty good wheels. I think you'll smash it.
It'd be a good laugh, that'll be sure. Anyway, who wants to go next? Tom, what have you been up to? Been in Berlin?
Oh, yeah.
How's running been as well? I need to know because surely we can't keep talking about Tom Follin, the injured runner.
Oh, no, I'm not injured anymore. Injured runner.
Got any races planned?
No, I mean, so the latest I've got from Rose, right, it's still 4 days, but just a bit more running. And I've got to the point now, to be honest, where I'm a bit like bored
Yeah.
Which
I did think you might get to this point.
Yeah. It's like that weird limbo where when you're injured and you know you can't run, that's almost better because you know that you can't get out the door and log some miles, right? Because you're it's going to hurt. You're going to set yourself back, blah, blah, blah. Then when you first start running again, you get this little, you know, little drop of dopamine where it's like, oh, here we go. We're back.
Yeah.
And now I'm at the point where I've been back running for what feels like ages, but I'm still not doing any like what I would consider proper running. I can't just go for a run of any distance, or I'm not doing sessions yet. Do you know what I mean? It's just in this weird like netherland where I don't really know how long it's going to be until I get out of it.
Almost like stagnation a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So
you've built back, you're not feeling any pain in the affected area, but at the same time, your training isn't jumping up. You've got nothing to really like aim for.
No, I've not really got anything to report at all from a running standpoint. I've not even really put much of it on Strava because I just can't be arsed. but I've been running 4 times a week. I've got one slightly longer run, which increases each week. So it started at 60 minutes. So I've run for an hour, 65, 70, 75. So but this is like 4 weeks from now, I'll be running 75 minutes.
But why is this? Sorry, is this because Rose, your physio, and whoever has said like you have to do it because of the risk of re-injury? Is it because you're still feeling scared? Like, do you get what I mean? Like, why hasn't your training jumped up? Not from a critique, more from like to explain to the listeners why you're taking it so slow and steady.
Yeah, so I'll ask Rose that question next time we have a proper catch up. But I think, generally speaking, it's because the risk of re-injury with this specific injury is so high. I remember talking to Becky Briggs at that On event ages ago, Ben, like a few months back. I think it's over 50% the likelihood of a refracture with this one. So I think Rose is just being really cautious with it, which is great because it means I'm sat here feeling ready to do more running rather than sat here with like phantom pains or wondering whether or not I've done too much, or you know, that aspect of it is good, but it's a bit tedious watching months and months go by and not really have any dramatic progress to report. So I can do steady and tempo stuff now towards the end of the shorter runs. So for example, on like one of the 40-minute runs, I can do it progressive, which
you
is
can
fine.
Build a little bit of intensity back into your training.
Yeah, I just feel like shit. That's the worst part, to be perfectly honest. Like running, I've maybe done a couple of runs I can think of in the last 6 months that have felt decent, where I felt like, oh, okay, yeah, but you know, I'm moving all right, breathing's good. Normally, it's one or the other. Normally, either my breathing's fine, but my legs feel fucked because I went to the gym the night before, or vice versa. And so it's difficult to really feel that excited about my own running at the moment, especially with all the stuff that's been going on at the moment, you know, like seeing Callum do the business, seeing you yesterday, not yesterday, what day are we on today?
Two days ago.
Yeah, seeing you on Sunday, Ben, you know, running your 10K, being at Berlin at the 36K mark, watching everybody go past. Like that's where it's difficult. I'm really happy for everybody else doing so well, but I also feel like it's been such a long time that I was in shape to race and to run the sort of times that I want to run. And it still feels like it's a long way off being in that kind of shape. So, yeah, I'm in a bit of limbo, really.
Mm.
What's the ultimate long-term goal in your mind?
In what sense? Like,
so not a holistic, not like an intrinsic goal. Like, I just want to be happy and run. More like, have you got in your head, I would love it if I could compete at X race?
I haven't let myself think of specific timelines or a race in X amount of months time, for example. Like after being at Berlin, it's got to be on the bucket list. And in my head, I would absolutely love to get over the next couple of months to get fit enough to start being able to get fit, you know, do some shorter stuff over the winter months and into spring, run a decent half, maybe something like Copenhagen, and then give the marathon another crack. Like in about a year from now, preferably Berlin or maybe Valencia or one of those. So that would be my ideal scenario. But yeah, I don't want to think about like the bigger long-term goals of running a decent marathon when at the moment, like 4 minute Ks at the end of these like steady runs, it doesn't feel hard on my legs. It just feels hard on my lungs and my breathing. That's the most frustrating thing, I think. Like running faster feels great. It feels smoother. It feels more efficient. My legs enjoy it. I don't pull up sore at all afterwards. But it's just like I can't physically get in enough air to be able to sustain a pace which feels easy physically, which is, that's definitely the worst part. It feels like you're ill. You know, if you run with a really bad head cold and you just feel awful, like, yeah, you know, your
lungs
feel
yourself,
hurt, your
you know, something
hurt.
Isn't quite right.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that 100% of the time. Whenever I go from, you know, running 5 minute Ks is fine, but anything where it starts getting a little bit quicker, when you start going into like, you know, 4:20s, 4:10s, down to just under 4 minutes, like it feels so hard on my chest and lungs. So that's the annoying part. And I think the only way to get over that is to do it, you know, to start doing, adding a little bit more intensity into it, like you said, Ben.
It's hard when you don't have direction, I think. Like when you don't have the incentive of being like, right, I'm training towards this thing, or I want to get to this point. It is, and especially the type of work you have where it's not linear, you're doing projects here, there, everywhere. It's hard to nail down anything more than what you need to do to just get better, which I think is what you're doing now, which is just, cool, I know the exercise I need to do from rows in order to not be injured. That's great. Mm. But like not being injured is hardly like a really big motivator, is it? It's not the sexiest of things to be like, oh, I just want to be good enough that I don't break my bones. Like you want to be like, no, I want to be good enough so I can run this pace, or, you know, do these sessions with these friends or whatever. So I think next time you catch up with it, you just kind of need to say, even if you just have a clear timeline of being like, can you, rather than just building up in duration and being like, cool, I get it, we're working towards running for 75 minutes. Is there something else, another way we can kind of spice this up? Like we're also working towards doing this mini session, or, you know, this bike session, or like some kind of different, you know, thing to get you a bit motivated.
Yeah. Because definitely. I think listening to what you've just said, I really struggle. Like as soon as I don't have something that I'm training for in terms of the next race, like I'm 2 days after the Vitality 10K, I don't have a training plan at the moment. And I'm already thinking like, what am I doing? Like, I think it's really difficult to get up in the morning and go out and run, I don't know, a certain workout, a certain distance, when you don't have a long term, like I'm doing this run so that when I line up on the next 10K, I have a better chance of getting a PB. Obviously, for you, you've been injured for such a long period of time. Like, that's just an unrealistic goal to have. You can't be like, in 6 weeks' time, I want to run a 10K PB, because the reality is that's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
You need to almost, if I were you, I would be breaking it down to almost like, you've got to go back to day one. Like, remember when you started running, probably one of my first goals, I don't know about you, was to break 20 minutes for the 5K. Like, that probably to you doesn't sound like a sexy goal to have, but like somebody who's just coming from absolutely nothing, you've got to almost have these like almost stepping stones to getting back to where you used to be. So like a 20 minute 5K or a 40 minute 10K may be your first goal, you know.
Yeah.
And it's announcing that as your goal to yourself, to us on the podcast, and then you can almost work towards it. I think that would really help with like building things back, not only just like Callum said, to be not injured, but you want to get to a point where you start enjoying your running, you start accomplishing things, and ultimately that's not going to happen without like a long-term goal plan, stepping stone process.
100%. The strangest thing is how many people tell you whilst you're in the deepest depths of injury, oh, you'll be amazed how quickly it comes back, you know, like a few weeks you'll be back fitter than you were before. And you see it on Instagram all the time, right? People bouncing back from injuries and saying that they've come back stronger and all of this, which is amazing, but I don't think you necessarily see this side of it where you're like, that feels so far away. I genuinely feel like I've only just started running, which I wasn't expecting. I expected to have a few weeks where I felt awful, where I felt heavy and slow and uncoordinated and everything else that comes along with not running for a while. but I didn't expect to be, you know, a few months on from getting the all clear to start running again and still be where I am at the moment, which is not really enjoying it, because like you say, there's not really any direction necessarily. It's like a win for me is running 5 minutes extra than I did the week before, which isn't enough.
That can only satisfy you for so long.
Exactly. Yeah. Like you say, yeah. We runners are we're an obsessive breed where, like you say, Ben, you just had a blinder at the weekend. Oh shit, I can't say that, can I?
You can't.
That was an actual accident.
You've got to address it now.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll speak about it afterwards because you're on a good, keep you going.
Yeah. So Ben had a great race on Sunday, right? But even now, 2 days later, you want the next thing. Yeah. And I think a lot of us are like that. And so for me, for my next thing to be 5 more minutes and no real like sizable improvement over the week before, that's where it's difficult. That's where you feel a bit stuck in the mud. And that's where you lose enthusiasm for it as well, where it's like, I actually don't want to run. Like, I'm running today after work and I don't want to. I'll do it, but I'm already like checked out of it because I know it's just an easy 45 minutes and it don't get me going, you know, but you've got to do that to get to the point where you can look forward to running again. So it's a tricky one, to be honest, at this stage.
Yeah. The other thing, just to touch on what I think you mentioned, is you often see on social media, blah, 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 blah. Like, it goes without saying, one, a lot of those people that have like the comeback from injury, whether it's either not an injury that was as severe as yours, which was like as bad as it can get, you know, bar like being in a coma or something, obviously. second of all, their rate of re-injury, I would say, generally speaking, is like significantly higher. So yes, they do a nice reel where they've come back from an injury and they've spanked out a great 5K, but it's like, what, you're going to get injured 3 times a year? That's probably not that clever, is it? And then the third thing is, the people that do manage to come back from it really quickly in a sustainable way probably don't have... they're like a professional runner, or like they don't have a job that is taking them all over the world, or they're on the feet all day, or they're doing this and that. Their job is just to focus on recovering, and that's like their thing. So they can go and get shockwave therapy every day, they can do this, eat that, whatever, because like their job is just to heal, whereas you've got other things to think about. It would be a bit weird if your priority with your family and job was thinking all day like, oh shit, like I better make sure that I, you know, do my, you know, reverse lunges or whatever you've got.
You've
got bigger fish to fry than that, do you get what I mean? So that goes for anyone, I think, who's got an injury and you're comparing how you should be coming back from it or what your goal should be. It's like so unique to each person based on your circumstances, isn't it?
I think we're in a rush a lot as well, aren't we? Like, you see everybody else performing well. You see everybody, well, obviously not everybody's performing well and running PBs. There are plenty of people who didn't hit their goal at Berlin and so on. But generally, what we're more likely to see is people sharing their successes. So when it's been so long since running well, it almost, you get into a battle where you feel like you're in a race against time. Like, oh, I'll have lost nearly a year of running. And you start putting weird, arbitrary, non-existent time limitations on yourself and getting back into shape in a certain time frame, which you don't need to do. It's like Andy always used to say, you know, no rush is his, like, one of the things he always used to say with training. Like, there's no rush. You don't need to, you know, flog yourself in one session because it's going to make all the difference. It's just consistency over time. So yeah, it's a difficult one. But on a more positive note, that all sounded pretty down in the dumps, but generally outside my own running, life works good. Summer started school, so I think after we recorded the last episode, I think it was her first week of school after we got off that call.
Cute.
So that was nice, that was exciting.
Certain ladies moved in as well.
Yeah, Samantha has moved all of her stuff here. She is officially a permanent resident of Bradford-on-Avon, which is also very nice.
Very awesome.
Thank God she's not in the back of these podcasts like last time.
No, she is. She just delivered my lunch, actually.
I've got... but do you not remember that episode with the bloody cutlery?
Yeah. Right, yeah. Just rattling through the drawers.
Yeah, I wasn't just being rude, being like, oh, thank God she's not here. I was obviously referencing that time where we spent about 30 minutes listening to her cutting something up.
Well, I've got some lovely, looks like chickpea wraps here. Three of them. Cool. I'm going to enjoy beautiful. Those after this.
You've changed, buddy.
But yeah,
what's for dinner? Ramen.
Do you know what? I actually got a bit distracted during the podcast because I got an email from Gusto saying that I need to place my Gusto order. So that's been a big change as well over the last few weeks since the last time we recorded the episode of the podcast. I'm now a proud Gusto user, and this is not sponsored. It's not Simmer Eats, Ben. It's
I wish it was.
It's Gusto, and it's bloody good, to be honest. I'm really quite enjoying the meals. Mm. Not that I cook any of them, to be perfectly honest. But
speaking of food, shall I tell you something that I saw in the last few days that is absolute travesty?
Yeah, go on.
I don't know if you guys are fans of chocolate bars at all. If you ever partake in a little
chocolate
bar.
Oh, no, I hate chocolate, mate.
Maybe you're passing a news age. Ben, the chocolate you have is probably some sort of like Peruvian shit you get imported from like coffee roaster. I'm talking about like news agents off the shelf job. Right.
Yeah.
Well,
one of my
favorite chocolate bars is actually the dark chocolate Bounty. I don't know if you've ever had the Bounty in the red packet. But anyway, okay. I was
reading.
I've got a clue
what you're about.
Well, do you know what a Bounty is? The chocolate.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's got a blue wrapper and it's got coconut in the middle.
Yeah.
Well, they make a dark chocolate version. They make a dark chocolate version with red. That's often a go-to of mine. Should I be getting one? Anyway, I was reading an article recently that came up on my timeline. Mars, the creators are actually pulling that chocolate bar. It's going to be discontinued. So this week I need to get myself out onto the streets and locate some people that have still got some dark chocolate bounties in stock and fill my cupboards, because it'll be a very sad day when that leaves.
That's a disaster.
I know. Gusto don't deliver them, let me tell you.
You can get a wholesale online. I'll send you a link.
Oh, I don't
24
know about
pack,
that.
£15.50. Not bad.
That's
the strawberry.co.uk.
Yeah, but do I need 24 chocolate bars, lads? That's the question, isn't it?
Definitely not, but that's 24 chocolate bars that you're never going to be able to buy again.
Yeah. That's what, like six months of chocolate bars, isn't it? If you have one a week.
Isn't
well, unless you're like me and you'd consume the majority of them.
Yeah, that'd be my problem.
Yeah, yeah.
If I bought 24, they'd be gone the next day.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be on three a day for a week.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Anyway, Tom, question for you.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're wrapped up with your running thing, but what have you been up to work-wise? Because you're not going to be able to remember all the trips you've been on, but what are some of the highlights? Obviously, we just had Berlin, and I know you're going to want to say a little spiel about Adidas and all that sort of stuff, but did you get up to anything before Berlin about what? Anything like that?
A little spiel about Adidas.
Yeah, go on, Tom. Yeah, Talk to us about shoes for 5 minutes.
I'm very passionate about this Evo 1. And yeah, you know, we've got to listen to questions, so we'll get on to that.
Yeah, before Berlin, what trips were you on? Because that's the big one, but where you been anywhere else?
I don't think so, to be honest, because I had a week off when summer started school. And then I've been to Devon a couple of times, I think, maybe. But yeah, nothing, unless I'm forgetting something, nothing major. Berlin was the big one.
Nice. What did you do in your week off?
What's I done my week off? Well,
just a quiet one.
Yeah, when they start school for the first time, it's like they're in mornings only for the first, or afternoons only for the first week. So I took the week off so I could drop her off and pick her up every day on the first week, because it's like 1:15 till 3:15 on the first week.
That sounds like a full-time job to me.
Yeah, so I did that. And then just... It was really nice, to be honest, not to do much. It was the week where we had unbelievable weather. It was like 28 degrees every day. Went paddle boarding. That was good.
See a bit of that. Looked very nice.
Yeah. Well, God, it's amazing. It's my first time and I loved it. I decided I'm a paddle boarding enthusiast now, but I decided just as we're turning into autumn and winter.
Didn't see it on your Strava though, Tom.
No, no.
It didn't count.
No. See, I was going to log it and then I thought, I've not even logged most of my runs recently, so
I think that's more reason to
paddle boarding on there.
Yeah, I might start logging my saunas soon as well to get in Callum's grill.
Yeah, that is mental. You know, I got sent that. I don't know if it was Matt Rees, wasn't it? Was it Matt Rees?
Yeah, Matt Rees.
So Matt Rees, the Welsh runner, by all accounts, great guy. I only met him once myself, but lovely guy. If anyone knows otherwise, sorry. But yeah, I saw that on Strava he's been putting his saunas, and it must be part of some wider like experiment or video or something he's doing where he's trying to stay in the sauna. But it was the first one I came across, and it was like 30-minute sauna number 8.
Yeah, I did see that. I wonder if it was he usually keeps those private and he just forgot to that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I don't know.
I've never seen one before, and then that was number 8. So maybe we give him the benefit of the doubt. Yeah.
I was like, bloody hell! Like,
it was quite funny though.
Sun lounger, 30 minutes. Yeah?
Start facial. Logging my coffee routine.
Yeah, facial 20 minutes. Yeah, or wrist hurting a bit after that latte art, 13 seconds. Yeah?
There's a PB anyway. To be had everywhere, mate.
Yeah, that was funny.
Life is full of PBs.
How was Berlin, Tom?
Oh God, yeah, Berlin was unbelievable, to be honest. Yeah, so we were out there with Adidas and Purgy Performance, who is Shocker. Run by Charlotte Purgy and her other half Adam Clarkey, both unbelievable people. So nice to spend time with them and get to know them over the last few months or so doing this project with them. But yeah, we had a few runners out there doing it as part of that setup. So we had Dean, Raja, Jemima, Amy, and Sally, who all did really well with their own respective goals. So that was very wholesome. And aside from that, just met lots of Adidas big dogs and chewed their ear off about shoes and stuff, which, yeah, was lovely. So I was in my element, really, to be honest, boys. And then
what's the hospitality saying? Better than New Balance?
Well, I didn't do much of the hospitality purely because we were just trying to spin around as much like content as possible, really. So I didn't. There was a dinner cruise I didn't go to. There was a cycling tour I didn't go to. And a few other bits and bobs that, yeah.
So just, you missed all the fun bits of your job just to make the content?
Well, pretty much, yeah. But for me, that is the fun part. Like, I'd much rather, like, spin around a little video of that Evo 1 than be on a boat. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, so I had a great time. It was really good. Really good.
What are you saying about the shoe?
Oh, so how do you want to do this? Because I can see there's a listener question, and I can see you've also put it in the running news as like a topic to talk about.
Yeah.
I've not looked at the question, but I reckon just read out the question and just answer it now.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So the question is from Mark. He says, wonder what your thoughts are on the new Adios Pro Evo 1 at £400 a pair. Surely the super shoe world has gone mad. I thought super shoes had to have a caveat that they were available to the masses to be acceptable. Not sure that £400 for a shoe is available for the masses, is what his argument is. What are your thoughts, Tom?
Thank you for your question, Mark. First of all, should preface all of this by saying I don't necessarily think the communication from Adidas' standpoint was perfect when it comes to talking about what the shoe is for and who it's for. To be more specific, I suppose. But whilst in
give us a summary of it for people who've never heard of this Adidas shoe.
So I'll just take a deep breath. The Adidas Adizero Adios Pro Evo 1. They could have just called it the Adizero Evo 1, couldn't they?
Not sponsored.
Is a
£400 shoe.
A £400 shoe, right? Carbon plated marathon race day shoe that has been released as an athlete servicing tool more than anything else, to give Adidas sponsored athletes the absolute best possible shoe that they could create. Now, it comes in at 138 grams, which is absolutely mental. It's 80 grams lighter than the Adios Pro 3, which is by all accounts an incredible carbon plated racing shoe in its own right. But because of how expensive it is to make this thing, because of all of the R&D that goes into it, they're only making 521 pairs, which obviously, from a global standpoint, makes it incredibly limited.
Am I missing why it's 521?
521 pairs. So I've been crunching numbers. I've been doing maths. I went back to Charlotte Heidman, who is the product manager of like the whole Evo 1 project. And I kept saying, I've done some more maths. I reckon it's 500 available globally, 20 that were made just for the athletes themselves. And then one of 521, which goes into the Adidas archive of all of their product. But that was wrong. So I actually still don't know why 521 pairs, to be perfectly honest. But there's been lots of controversy, lots of false information that was put out there, lots of, just speculation. So generally speaking, this shoe is not designed for the masses. So that's the first response to the question. This is not a consumer-facing friendly shoe that really anybody who's running a marathon over 3 hours, or to be honest, to be brutal, if you're running a marathon slower than 2:30, this probably isn't a shoe that's gonna work for you or work enough to justify the price tag. This is a shoe that is designed to provide the absolute maximum efficiency gains, running economy gains to the absolute elite runners of the sport, right? So you're talking the 1% of the 1%. So that's the first point. This isn't a consumer-facing product, but as Mark said in his question, for a shoe to be legal under World Athletics compliancy regulations, it has to be made available to the public in some degree. Now, I did some digging and I don't think there's a minimal number of units that you have to make to be classed as available to the public. I thought maybe that's where the 521 number came from as well, but that was also wrong. So they had to make it available to the public in some way or another. They've done it in a raffle format. So that's it really, in a nutshell. It's a very, very exclusive product that was designed to break world records. You saw it happen at the weekend. I'm sure we'll see it happen again. And that is the purpose of the shoe. It is not for you or I to go out there and buy and run a sub-3 marathon in. It's to run, you know, world records and the like. That's it in a nutshell.
And
really,
it's for one race, right?
Yes. Thank you, Callum.
It's in the box.
So this is another
self-destructs
big...
after 42K.
It literally says for one race plus familiarization time.
Yes.
Like every pair comes with a thing that says that.
It does. But again, this is straight from the horse's mouth as well, because we had a little panel talk thing where they said any questions, and I had many questions, but I could only really ask one because I was in a room full of people. So that was the main question that I asked.
Did you have to start with, hello, I'm Tom from ProDirect?
I didn't, because I met the people earlier anyway. So I think, I'd already waffled on a lot about my thoughts and feelings towards the shoe. So they knew. But the shoe's not going to fall apart, right? Every single stage of prototyping of this Evo 1 shoe was tested to at least 100K. Most of them were tested to about 200, 250K. So we saw prototypes of the shoe with different outsoles, different midsoles, different uppers, blah, 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 blah. And they were all tested to significantly more mileage than one single race. So what they said is for an elite athlete with decent form, who's not going to be a shuffly heel striker and rip it to pieces after one run, there's about a 30K familiarization period. So that is your last big marathon session. That could be, you know, your last big marathon session and strides at the end of your last shakeout, for example. That's familiarization. Then one race all in just refers to that's when you're getting the absolute maximum benefit from an economy and efficiency standpoint from the lab tests and the science and the data that backs it up. But you can still wear it after that. The shoe's not useless. It's the same with any carbon plated shoe. It has a shelf life of absolute maximum performance, but you can wear a Vaporfly to bloody 500, 600, 700 miles if you want to. It will look like shit by the end, but it will still function as a shoe. And it's the exact same with this. Yes, the upper is not going to be particularly robust. Yes, there's no sock liner, so it's probably not going to be that comfortable. Yes, the outsole might show serious signs of degradation after a very small period of time, but it's not going to spontaneously combust. The shoe is not going to crumble into ashes after one race in it. So that, again, was a bit of nonsense.
And more are getting released in November, right?
In theory, yeah. But again, I wasn't given a straight answer on how many, how readily available those will be, whether it will just be a raffle again, and how that whole process will work. So, yeah.
Interesting.
That's it in a nutshell, really.
I've seen across my Instagram. I don't know about yours.
Yeah, it's nuts.
It's like this white shoe everywhere.
The only other thing, very keen shoe fans who may have been on like the World Athletics shoe compliancy list, there is an Evo V2 listed on there. Now, this isn't a new iteration that's already in the works and already getting approved and in that process with World Athletics. It's simply the Evo 1 that we've seen, but with a continental rubber outsole. Because the Evo 1 that you've seen in lots of the, well, in like the lead assets that were shared by Adidas directly and in lots of videos. That is using a liquid rubber compound is what they're calling it. It's incredibly thin. They've never used it before. But what they've also done is...
It only works in the dry or something like that. If it's wet, it's useless.
It's not been tested as rigorously on wet conditions as something like Continental Rubber has, which is used on the Boston and Adios Pro 3 and basically any Adi mileage shoe from the last like 5 or so years or longer, to be fair. Wow, like over 10 years, actually. Which is incredibly grippy. Excellent traction on wet surfaces from Continental. So the Evo V2 that you see on that list is purely a Continental outsole version of the Evo 1, which won't be available to the public, but it had to get signed off by World Athletics for athletes to race in it. And then you saw Tigist Assefa, she wore the Continental outsole version, and a few other people did as well in Berlin.
There we go. Running Throughways exclusive.
So there you go. That's the shoe. That's
very
the Evo
nice.
1.
Well done, Tom. Thanks for the TED Talk.
I need to lie down after that. Ben, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to?
Sorry, can I say one quick thing?
Yeah, go on.
Just to summarise that, neither of you got a pair, correct?
No.
Okay. No. Exclusive.
They don't exist for, there aren't any seeding units or anything like that. You'll see a few accounts in the US will have like one pair. So Runner's World have got one. Believe in the Run have got one. I'm not sure who else. But Pro Direct Running will have one. But it's a raffle. We've only got one single pair available. We're not allowed to sell it. It's just through a raffle process. So yeah, even Ben is running.
Even Ben is running.
Number one YouTube content creator on the planet can't get them.
I tried.
Maybe November. Didn't happen. I've heard. Maybe November. I've heard they might have a few.
I'm going to pairs. Going to Kenya in November. I'll probably find some in the shops there.
Yeah, you'll be able to buy. You'll be
selling them straight away.
You'll be able to buy them there, no problem.
No problem.
Well, they're on eBay. If you want to spend bloody hell, there's a pair from Germany for £2,300, and there's a couple for £600 from the UK on there already.
There's a subtle.
Maybe we buy them all, and then we'll just own the market, and we can put them up even higher.
Go on then, mate. You buy them, and I'll.
Yeah, you go first.
One final comment on those, completely to blow my own trumpet, pretty much, is I was invited by Adidas to go and test them out in Kenya with the pros, but it just didn't happen in terms of logistics, which is a real shame.
Why? Yeah. What do you mean? Were you already in Kenya?
No, so they basically rang me up and were like, we're going out to Iten to test this new shoe. It's called the Evo 1. Don't tell anyone. I had to sign an NDA to say I wouldn't tell anyone. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to come. I was going to make a piece of content and release it when the shoe went live to the public, but they basically wanted me to fly out on the Friday, and they rang me up on the Wednesday, and it just logistically was impossible, which is a shame.
I know that, Ben. Someone told me whilst I was out there that they were like, oh, you do a lot of stuff with Ben Felton, don't you? Ben is running. He's like, yeah, we do, blah blah blah, and they were like, yeah, you were meant to be part of
apparently
of this project.
So
that's pretty,
that's mental,
that's
isn't it?
Pretty good. Yeah.
When I heard it, I thought it was like a hoax. Like, oh yeah, Adidas got this new shoe and it's going to be 130 grams and it's called the Evo 1. And I'm like, why would you be telling me? Like, surely this isn't true. And it was, and the whole thing was, it was going to be ready for the Berlin Marathon. So obviously time frames were very much like
very
set in stone.
Yeah.
So it never really happened, but it would have been a pretty cool experience. But
it was amazing though. Like being out there, they had a biomechanist guy out there who was talking all about like the advances of shoe technology and the improvement on marathon times and that kind of thing. And I think I'm going to butcher this, but he was basically saying, like, because of how light this shoe is, the weight reductions can result in a 2% increase in performance, which for Tigist would have got her from her old PB of 215, like 215 mid, I think, from previous Berlin Marathon to about 213 low, just from the shoe itself. Like I say, I've probably butchered that, but that was the general gist of it. And she ended up running. Yeah, well,
that
we'll
is
get
incredible.
On to that.
And then Tom pressed pause on his camera, and then the guy went, yeah, and the plus the EPO, she should do 211. But we didn't get that. We didn't get that on the record. That's just allegedly because we didn't actually get that on the record.
The shoe is a disguise for the drug scandal.
He just cleverly captured all the bits about the shoe, and actually just they just turned off the microphones when they all openly admitted to each other that it's seemingly impossible that she's actually done this thing. But yeah, who knows? Good on her. Only 3 seconds a kilometer slower than Kipchoge between mile 23 and the finish. So yeah, sounds legit. Great shoe. Buy them. Yeah, go for it. Ben, when you're in Kenya, you can probably, if you can't get the shoes, I'm sure you can get something else to help you out.
Yeah, definitely. 6 weeks no of a Kenyan diet, I'll be flying, mate.
Yeah, just get the Ugali in, you'll be fine. But no, I met Tigist, right? We did a little interview with her. Her English isn't the best, but all I can say on the matter is she was very nice. She was wearing a lovely tracksuit. She had her nails done and she was very, very sweet. Very nice. Yeah.
She only knows three.
She's Ethiopian as well, isn't she?
Her English isn't good. Her English isn't very good. She only knows three letters of the alphabet.
Brilliant. Evo. Evo 1.
Yeah, Evo.
Yeah.
you're 66% correct on that one.
Brilliant.
Good maths, that, Callum.
That's right.
But yeah, great, great trip it was. Very good trip.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good, mate.
Ben, on to you.
All right. I better do some sort of update on what I've been up to 60 minutes into the podcast. I'll try to keep it short and sweet.
Jesus Christ, we've really gone on, haven't we?
So, to summarize my 3 weeks, right, in a simple one little paragraph summary, I ran a 6 week training block. The last 3 weeks of it, we didn't talk about on the podcast. That training block looked like a build, 2 weeks at peak volume, and then a 2 week taper into what was yesterday, which was the Vitality, no, not yesterday, Sunday. The Vitality 10K, which was my A goal race. I was aiming to break 30 minutes, 30 seconds. My previous PB was 30:56. And the race went pretty well. I didn't end up breaking 30:30. I ran 30 minutes and 50 seconds, so a 6 second PB. I was really happy with that. Leading into the race, I picked up a cold, which is typical, like 6 weeks of perfect training. No niggles, no illnesses, anything like that. Night before, you've got a really bad sore throat, you can't sleep. Anyway, still lined up, went for it, ended up running 30:50, very happy. And now 2 days later, going to this lovely place at the weekend. Let me just press it here. Oh no, one sec.
Skopje
in Macedonia. I'm going to be running a half marathon, a listener very kindly recommended about probably 3 months ago. And we just found it quite interesting that he had recommended that.
OG listeners will remember that.
Exactly.
OG listeners will remember that reference.
Yeah, and if you don't know, we've got an extensive back catalogue that you can go back through and try and find the episode where we mentioned it, get the views up.
Exactly. So, yeah, any questions, boys?
Any questions? That was very quick, Ben.
Open it up to the crowd.
You had your birthday, didn't you, as well?
I did have my birthday. We went away with Meg's family to... It was a bit of an interesting place, to be honest with you. It wasn't in Wales and it wasn't really in England. It was on the border between the two. So
I'd go... Hereford, wasn't it?
It was near Hereford, yeah. That was the closest town. And it was kind of close to the Malvern Hills, if you're familiar with that geography of the world. It was kind of closer to your neck of the woods, I think, Tom, maybe? Yeah. No, 2 hours away, roughly. Anyway, lovely holiday. It was just a retreat type holiday where Meg's parents booked a nice... house. It had a hot tub and we just had a relaxing like holiday. Went to a few food markets. It fell at a pretty good time in my training. I only had to my training was reduced because I'd started the taper, so I didn't have to run like twice a day every day type thing, so that was quite nice. I took some downtime and it worked out pretty well because on the race day I felt the freshest I've felt in a long, long time. So I think the taper works out pretty well. It'll be a good like blueprint for future races moving forward.
What do you think, this isn't a critical question, what do you think stopped you getting the 30:30 that you've been training for? Because, I mean, a lot of your sessions were, you know, really good. Like they indicated you could run, if anything, I was thinking you were going to run close to 30 minutes and 31 based on some of the sessions you're doing. What do you think it was? Like, did you get any feelings in the race where you were like, this is what I'm lacking? Like, when did it start to get hard? Did it get hard at any point? You know, did you go for it enough? What were you thinking?
To be honest with you, it was, I think the main reason was I couldn't breathe through my throat very well. Like, Fair. You probably hear it in my voice now. Like, it was at the very start of the cold. Meg had been ill all the week, and we'd sort of stayed away from each other, apart from obviously sleeping in the same bed. But yeah, 2 days before the race, completely fine. Then the afternoon before, just had a sore throat. And then that night before the race was just horrible. Felt like I had razor blades in the back of my throat. Lined up on the start line, the adrenaline, everything kicked in. I didn't really notice it that much. It just felt like I couldn't fully push it. I reckon I was operating around 95% of like max capacity. So I don't want to make excuses like the 20 seconds was because I was ill. But I think that was a major reason. And also the way the race panned out, I didn't really run with anyone. It wasn't in my head. I was going to be running 30 minutes for a 10K with a group of like 20 other guys. And because the race wasn't the British 10K championships like it was the year before, it panned out a little bit differently to how I thought it was. And yeah, 30-50 is the best I had on the day. I'm still pretty chuffed with it. Came away with a big sense of achievement, having run the fastest ever run for a 10K. So you can't really complain about that, especially given the way I felt in the race.
Did you beat any Olympians, Ben?
I didn't beat any Olympians, no. Not that I'm aware of, but I nearly... I think I was only about three positions behind Ellis Cross, the last year's winner, so that was quite nice. Mm. But he didn't have a bad day. He didn't have a good day, sorry. So I wouldn't like to be like, oh, I was only 30 seconds behind him. But anyway.
Yeah, Ellis had a poor race, relatively speaking. Like, Jackro beating him by 1 hour. By one minute.
20 seconds.
A minute and 45 seconds. Yeah, it's pretty nuts, isn't it?
Yeah. But no, the course isn't like rapid either. Like, I'm planning to do Telford 10K, which will be my next 10K
race. Yeah,
that's
rapid.
Which is going to be fast. Like, yeah. I've had a few people message me saying like that your result at the Vitality 10K would equate to like a low 30 minute performance at Telford. So we'll see. Going to go to Kenya, 6 weeks altitude, and then I'll race the Telford 10K like 2 or 3 days later. And to be honest with you, I'll go for it a bit more. Like, if you look at my splits from the Vitality 10K, I was very consistent. I was very keen for the first 10 minutes of the race not to go like all guns blazing, like my usual full send attitude. I wanted to keep some in the tank with the intention of just working through the gears throughout the race. But the way I was feeling when I got to like 90% effort, there was, for the last 10 minutes, I couldn't really push it anymore. And I was on my own at that point. And I just thought, look, you're doing really well. Keep this going and you've got yourself a decent PB. Like, I never gave up on the 30-30 project. Like, I was always going for it, but just on the day, that's the best I had. Simple as that.
Mm.
Yeah, fair. What does your training look like, or your racing look like between now and Telford then? Telford's first week of December, right? It's the same week as European Cross, I think.
So there'll be no... I'm going to Kenya at the end of October. So 6 weeks in Kenya, and then days after that, when I get back, is the Telford 10K. So in terms of the immediate prep, there won't be any races. I'll just be up breathing the thin air in a 10. But I'm also doing a half marathon this weekend in Macedonia. But I don't know. Again, that's more of just I'm pacing a friend. I might not even end up finishing the full race the way it pans out. We'll see. And then I'm also doing, I think, I'm not sure if it's been confirmed yet with Tom and the ProDirect team, but
Oxford half.
Hopefully
baby.
Doing Oxford half. Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, that will just be, it won't be an A goal race. I'm not going to be like, I'm going to be running 30 minutes, like 65 minutes for a half marathon. It would just be like, I'm going to go there and give it my best and see what sort of fitness I'm in for half marathon.
On the hallowed streets of Oxford, eh?
In the Hocker Rocket Carbon X too.
Yeah, baby.
But yeah, I'm looking
forward
to it.
Great shoe, to be fair, isn't it? Great
It
shoe.
Is very good. I wish I raced my 5K in it that I did maybe a few months back. I literally was going to wear it and then last minute bailed out and wore a Vaporfly.
Why did you wear the Alphafly at the weekend, Ben?
Because for me, the Alphafly is the best carbon racing shoe, I think, for 10K, half marathon. For me personally, I feel like that's not the case in terms of like, if I was to put the carbon racing shoe on the pedestal, like I think it's the best, it'd probably be the Pro 3 at the moment. But I think for my personal cadence, foot strike, like the Alphafly just feels phenomenal for me. And I always, it's one of those shoes that when I hit my race pace, I never deviate from it, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
Whereas if I race in a Vaporfly, they feel almost so direct that my first K can be 10 seconds quicker than I want it to be without even realizing it. Whereas with a Alpha Fly, I hit my race pace and then I'm
not buying that.
It.
I'm sorry. I put up with a lot of shoe shit on this podcast. I'm not buying that. What? So there's a shoe that locks you into a pace, and if you wear a Vaporfly, it's so good that you go 10 seconds faster than you want. That's just training and you, isn't it? Like you're the control if you go 10 seconds too fast.
It's just I'm just talking from like my experience of racing in different shoes. Every time I've raced in the Alpha Fly, I've had that experience.
I think that's you becoming more mature as an athlete. Like this time you set out, your splits were extremely. Like they weren't what you wanted them to be in terms of like they were a bit slower than you wanted, but they were all very accurate. You didn't fully fall off a cliff like you have in previous races. You didn't go off too fast. You were very measured. I think that's a sign that you're getting fitter, stronger, more experienced athlete.
Yeah.
I think you're doing yourself a disservice, even if it's nice to convince yourself the shoes are a big help. I think you're doing yourself a disservice to say like, oh, it's the Alpha Fly why I did that. I think you're just getting much better at running. If you wore any of the carbon shoes, yes, of course, some are going to get along with you better than others. But like when it comes to locking into a pace or doing that, like I wouldn't convince yourself that that's a thing. I think that's you getting better. Like you got to give yourself some credit of that. And in the same way, if you balls it up, that's not like the Vaporfly.
It's not
or
the shoe.
That's
no, 100%. Like, 100%. I take back what I said. It's mainly what I'm trying to say is the reason I picked the Alpha Fly is I wore the Alpha Fly for my first marathon, had a great experience. I wore that Alpha Fly for my 10K PB, my previous one, had a great experience. Like every time I wear that shoe, I start the race, I lock into the pace, and I have a great race. Like it's more of a confidence thing. Like,
yeah, no, 100%.
I put that shoe on and I know that it's going to do the business. Like, there might be better shoes out there, but because I have that such positive affirmation for one pair of shoes, as soon as I put it on, it almost gives me that edge over the others, if you know what I mean.
Totally with you on that. I think that goes for all shoes, right? Like sometimes if you know you're putting on a cushioned pair of recovery shoes or what in your head are cushioned, then you get out the door and you do your easy 3 miles. You're like, oh, that wasn't too bad. That felt nice and slow. Like I think that I totally get that mental side of things. Question for you lads, quick one. You know, super shoes, are there any that are the exact same spec in terms of like the drop, the, you know, like basically is there two shoes that are the same in terms of how far you are off the ground? What the drop is on them, what the stack eye is, all that sort
they're
of
all,
shit.
They're all pretty much the same, to be honest with you.
But is there any that are the exact same?
No, I don't think so.
No,
the main
none
difference
I know
is,
of that are
is
identical.
Is the type of foam that's used. That's
what I was. Yeah,
that's always
what I was going to say
variant.
Is, if they were the exact same, in theory, would you be able to wear on your left foot one shoe and on your right foot another shoe and it would feel normal?
I think I could wear a Vaporfly on one foot and an Alphafly on the other. Like, they're completely different shoes, but it's not going to make me run slower.
Yeah, but would it feel weird running? Do you get what I mean? Like, it would if they were uneven, right? You'd not fall over, but like, if you're going at pace, you probably would fall over because you've missed the ground.
You just get used to it. Like, after the first few hundred meters, you'd just be like, right, that's what shoes I've got on my feet.
I'm not sure. I think you're making it sound easier than it is, but I would love to see someone do it. And it, Ben, as a man that you know would love some views, I think that'd do well if you raced with one kind of like Rocket X on your left foot and something else on your right. And I think you could dress it up and be like really deadly serious about why you're doing it. And be like, oh yeah, I think this is a great cornering shoe. And like, there's more corners that are taken on my right hand side.
People would believe me, like, they'd actually consider it for themselves.
They'd copy you 100%. Be like, oh, I've never thought of that, Ben. That's great. Like, definitely the stability on my right ankle is poor, so I'm probably going to wear a flat on that one. Like, what boosts the carbon on the left? Like, you should do that.
All right, mate, I'll do that just for you. On the shoe talk, I actually brought a pair of Vaporflies that were brand new on Vinted for £70. They came, and they're fake. So now I have a fake pair of Vaporflies. But
Why are you buying them? Do you not just rig up Tom and just get whatever you want?
Because I saw them on Vinted and I thought they're fake. So that made me buy them.
You should make a video of that. That'd be great.
I'm 100% going to have to run a 5K in them. But they are ridiculously fake. Like, you put them on and they feel like you've got a brick on. The midsole doesn't compress at all.
Do a giveaway of them on your Instagram.
I'll have to make some sort of content. I haven't figured out what I'm going to do yet. But
can we do a Run It Three Ways giveaway with them?
Yeah, 100%. We're all sign a pair of these fake Vaporflies.
Mm. Definitely. Yeah. Maybe not sign them. I don't think we need to sign them, but we could give them away, couldn't we?
Give them away. Yeah, it's only £70 my money. No worries.
One day we should do this, right? In when we're in a period where we're taking things less seriously with our running and injuries and all that, right? I think this would be a sick idea.
Yeah.
Right. That was Ben for the record, right? What we'll do is each of us has to put together a running outfit, right? Of a super shoe, socks, shorts, vest, whatever it is, hat, any accessories you want within reason. And you put it in a black bag, okay? Like a bin bag. And we all, so we have three black bin bags. Then we mix them up or we get someone else to do it. So they're all random. And then each one of us picks a bag and that's what we've got to run the race in.
I've wanted to do this. Oh, have you seen the football videos where it'll be like someone holding a football and like a ball made of Lego behind the other person? And
yeah,
without
looking,
they have to point to it.
I remember.
And then they've got to.
Telling me about this before.
But exactly. I think I want to do that with running.
Why it would work well, right, is because like I could put together a horrendous outfit with the worst shoes ever, but there's a chance I could be the one that ends up with that outfit.
Yeah,
great idea.
Oh my God.
Bunny day.
Right,
that's sorry.
What was that?
Easy laughs.
Put your ADHD in a box for a second. Right, wow, okay.
Sorry to bring it to a close there.
Yeah, so now what do we do then?
Well, we've done an update. Each of us has had their chance to talk. We've done a bit of running news. We've talked about a woman world record. We've got three listener questions that I could fire through.
Yeah. Before we do that though, I was going to say I meant to add this onto the end of the Berlin bit, but I forgot. There were a fair few people who came over and said they listened to the podcast, which was amazing.
Brilliant.
There's like five people, I think.
Love
I saw
that.
A couple guys at the expo. I met a bloke called Tom at the airport yesterday before we flew back in Berlin.
It wasn't Tom from Hattie P, was he?
No.
Because he's getting the listener shout out this weekend as well.
I would assume not because he was flying to Bristol.
Right.
What's his name? He is...
God, you don't even care about our listeners, mate.
Runner called Tom on
Runner called
Instagram.
Tom.
Yeah. But yeah, he came over. We had a good little chat. And then
Brilliant.
There was a bloke who was running past at 36K you shouted out. And then a German listener. I met a German listener as well.
Oh, guten Tag.
How about that?
Brilliant. I'll get the German translate up in a minute. And I'll end the show with a lovely little message.
Yeah, fantastic.
Brilliant. Well, I'll go through a couple of questions quickly then. They're quite simple ones. So we try and keep them short and sweet because we're running out of time as well. Been blabbing on about our worlds of running. Anyway, the first one's from Tom. He says he's off to Asia. He's doing a bit of traveling and he can only bring one shoe with him. He's mainly going to be using it for easy runs just to sort of maintain his fitness while he's over there. But he also wants to do a bit of trail running, maybe a shoe that he can do some hiking in. So he's got the Mach 5 at the moment, but he's a bit worried that he doesn't have enough outsole grip. What shoe would you recommend? A one shoe that you pack in your suitcase that you can do all sort of running.
First of all, I've loved all the shoe chat on this episode. So thank you very much, listeners. I reckon for me, number one shoe I would take, if I could only take one shoe anywhere, it would be Boston 12 right now. I think it's sensational.
Yeah, it's a good choice. And it's got a decent amount of outsole grip on it as well. So it fits.
Great outsole coverage. Very comfortable. We'll do you a number on any sort of terrain.
I would probably go, if out of the shoes I've got in my little collection, I would go for the Nova Blast 3, but the TR version.
Oh, yeah.
It's just got a little bit extra grip. I took it to Kenya with me and I used that shoe like basically every day because you've got trails, you've got slippery surfaces, and it seems to handle it no problem. So I'd probably pick that shoe. TR, you probably can get it at a fairly decent price at the moment.
Yeah.
Is he taking just one pair on his whole trip or is he going to have some other shoes to like go to dinner and shit in?
Well, I don't know.
That's a great question.
He did say just one pair of running shoes.
Because if he's just taking one and you're a hobby runner, you also have to think about the fashion element and the comfort. Like,
I think Boston would look all right, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but not if you've been running like on muddy
on
trails.
It's not
genable, is it?
It's definitely not
genable. Plus, like, what if he's doing a lot of walking around in the day, like going to a museum or like seeing some sort of shit? You want a comfortable shoe, don't you? You don't want to be thinking about performance.
Yeah, genable. maybe a Clifton then.
Yeah,
Ben,
funny you say that. So what I was going to say was, if he's taking one on the whole holiday, I'd take a nice colourway of a Clifton.
Yeah, an all black Clifton.
Yeah, blackout Clifton.
Or something like that. But if he's taking his normal creps and then he's going to just take a running pair, then I would say the Puma
Forever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, is that the one I've been? I'm gonna have to Google this shit. I don't know the name.
The one you wear all the time, and you've gone through a couple pairs.
What's that called?
Isn't it the Forever Run?
Yes.
The orange ones, and then white ones that you got from Size or whoever it is.
Yeah, but I don't really want that rainbow color. That would make me feel sick on holiday. Puma Forever Run Nitro. Yeah,
they are definitely not jeans worthy.
Oh, they're
in
not
that colorway. Not jeanable. No,
they barely get away with running shorts, mate.
You have to go quick to
they feel good though.
Those.
They feel good.
Yeah, colorways are wacky, aren't they?
Yeah, get them. They're on offer for £100 right now on Size, but you have to get them with a rainbow bottom.
Perfect. Okay, next question is from Callum himself. He wrote into the email. He said he would love to hear your thoughts on nasal breathing while running. Is it something you've tried and didn't get on with, or is it something you've tried and seen some benefit with?
Oh, this is from a guy called Callum.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was addressed to me. Sorry. Right,
well, I mean, okay. you can address it if you like.
No. You guys go for this one. Nasal breathing. Go ahead.
I've never tried to adjust the way I breathe while I'm running. Simple as that.
You should probably breathe with your nose, I would have thought.
Isn't there something like breathe in through your mouth and out through your nose? I don't know.
Yeah, that was a shit joke. I think this is referring to nasal breathing exclusively. So if you've
taken up your mouth.
If you find yourself in the deepest depths of your
Instagram
algorithm.
This is a TikTok, isn't it?
Yeah,
this is a TikTok craze.
You'll get fed videos by like Andrew Huberman types, like proper macho performance orientated blokes who are like these hybrid.
You don't need
athletes.
Shoes, your feet could do the work.
Exactly.
That sort of video.
And people who are like, the perfect way to breathe is to do a quick double nasal inhale and then an outward breath because it reduces anxiety and will make you run easier. That was a direct quote from Andrew Huberman, by the way. Wow. He's got a great podcast on some topics, but nonsense on running. I don't know why you would want to breathe nasally. You've got your mouth for breathing for a reason. And I think the only reason I've heard it spoken about is if you're trying to run really easy. If you're trying to run super duper easy, you should be able to breathe nasally. But I think that's a load of nonsense, personally. So
I've always thought about, like, is there a piece of apparatus that could limit the amount of oxygen that you could intake whilst out for a run? So you could basically mimic being at altitude, like a mask, basically.
Yeah. You can get altitude masks. If you've not seen people wearing them. I've seen people wearing them down the high street. They're like, they'll have their big, thick tracksuit on, like wrapped in a bin bag, and they'll have this like altitude mask thing on.
Why are we not seeing pro runners use them?
We are? Yeah, not when they're out running, but you can have it plugged into a machine on a treadmill.
Yeah, but isn't that just to monitor oxygen levels?
No. You can have that. Like, have you seen at NAU at the college? They've got a whole room where they can lower the, they can increase the oxygen, because they're so high at altitude. Rather than having to drive down hours to get to low altitude to do quality workouts, they can increase the oxygen levels in the room like you would in a sauna when a sauna gets hot. They just increase the oxygen levels and then smash out their intervals on the treadmill.
Mm. Oh, brilliant.
And equally, you've got people getting altitude tents and sleeping in them, right?
Well, what I was going to say is the reason why most runners are not doing it is because there's no benefit from just, well, there's limited benefit from just running.
Yeah,
at
you have
that altitude
to be in the environment.
Exactly. So you ideally want a tent in your living room where you have your sofa and your TV and your desk inside it, and then you want one around your bed for when you go to sleep, because then you can spend like 20 hours a day in it, you know?
That's my question.
To answer this question, though, nasal breathing
total bollocks.
Yeah.
Thank you, Callum. Okay.
Yeah. If you Google it, though, there's loads of articles about it, but none of them are from like legit places. They're all just like trends and shit like that.
Yeah.
There isn't a right way to breathe, really, is there? Let's be honest.
Watch any professional race and see how they breathe, and then go, "Oh, that's funny. Kipchoge had his mouth open for all the race. Maybe he was breathing through it. If he's not doing it, you don't need to do it. Simple as that."
Yeah. And the third and final question was about the Evo 1, but we answered that already. So
Should we talk about it some more, guys? What do you
reckon? No, I think that's enough, mate.
Okay.
Yeah, you can do that on your Instagram DMs because I'm sure you had plenty.
If any of our listeners won a pair in the raffle, if you were an idiot like me and Ben and you entered the raffle and you won a pair, let us know, please, because I was genuinely... I didn't think I cared.
Just debunk. Just see if there is actually 521 and try and locate every single pair.
Oh, that is such a mint idea. They should put them on a map where the shoes are.
Yeah.
That,
Or they should team up with Strava, and if you log miles in that shoe, it's in a different colour. That would be sick. I should work in marketing. Oh my God. Why are Pro Direct not on the phone to me more often? The only time I speak to Pro Direct is these calls every week.
Brilliant.
You know you can get whatever shoes you want.
No, I don't want them. Fuck them. Oh. I'm just kidding. I actually want loads.
Well, that's the end of the podcast then.
Yeah.
No, there we go. So, right, we'll see you in 3 weeks, people.
Yeah, let's try and keep this a little bit more regular if we can.
Yeah, in a dream world.
Yeah, although advanced warning, next week's episode will be late. Genuinely will be, because I'm not back until...
And I'm off to Kenya for 6 weeks, so there definitely won't be any pods then. So.
Oh, he's going to be back in his
I'm not going again. In the cupboard. Well, maybe I'll give it a try.
We'll work something out. Make sure you take your headset.
Yeah, I'll take my headset. It's just the Wi-Fi, isn't it?
Maybe we could. You're going to meet some really crazy people out there, so maybe we could actually get some guests on.
Yeah, maybe I just do like a 15-20 minute segment each week that I record live there, and you just do the normal podcast, and we just chuck it in.
Yeah, that could work.
Anyway, this is probably a conversation not for the for a current podcast. We can chat. We can discuss that in the WhatsApp.
You never gave Tom from Hattie P his shout out.
Oh, I didn't. Did oh, thanks for reminding me. Well, he completed his debut marathon. He ran 2:59, which can I say is the best time for your debut. Sub
Get
three.
Up there, boy.
Good lad. In 28 degree conditions, and now he's unofficially, the Hatfield Peverell's second best marathoner behind myself.
Can you confirm that, Ben? Do you know?
I cannot confirm, but considering since I've lived here for the last 2 years, I can probably count the number of runners I've seen on one hand. I reckon that's probably a good shout. Tom from Hattie P.
Great stuff.
There we go. That's a lovely way to end the episode. Better than fuck Pro Direct anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I never said that for the record.
Never. And you want shoes. Man. Yeah, I've just said it.
I will say Clip it. Though. Yeah. No one makes clips of this, mate.
No.
Yeah, maybe if anyone wants to start that, start like a little TikTok or something like that. You'll probably get 3 or 4 followers.
Yeah, we'd follow it. That'll be it.
I don't even
know. Yeah, you'll get at least 3 followers.
Yeah.
Class. Right, anyway, boys, great to catch you up and all the best.
That's okay. Thank you very much.
all the best. Kind regards. We'll see you next time.
Yeah, see you later.
We've got how to end these, haven't we?
Cheers, chaps. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.